Thank you for joining me today in MX Asian American, or Mixis Asian American. If you don't know, MX or Mixis represents the gender-neutral presentation of Miss or Mr. My name is Karen Zhang, and I will be your host, guiding you through the Asian diasporic experience with an emphasis on the Asian American experience. Enjoy the show! Welcome back, everyone, to MX Asian American. Today we have Khan with us. You want to introduce yourself first to listeners?
Sure. My name is Khan Bongsavan. I'm an immigration attorney focused on finding immigration solutions for small businesses and families, such as H-1B visas, L visas, O visas, and green cards, where families and companies can sponsor people for green cards. I also help families with wills, trusts, and estate planning. On the personal side, I am married. I have 4 brothers, 2 sisters, 17 nieces and nephews. Spend a lot of time with family and friends and enjoy a good cocktail.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Khan, for coming on the show. I always like to start with a little bit about the background and childhood. So could you tell us a little bit about how and where you grew up?
Sure. It's a little bit of a long story, but it's almost full circle. I'm actually sitting in Laos right now. Came for a small mini vacation and to visit family. But I was born in Laos, came to the US when I was 2 years old. We landed in Maryland, moved to Pennsylvania, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, then moved to North Carolina in the 6th grade. And that's where most of my family is in North Carolina right now. We moved to the United States because my dad fought in the Laos Civil War, the side that the US supported. It is the side that ended up losing the war. But because of safety concerns and because of opportunities for their children, my parents made the difficult decision to move to America when I was about 2. We came as refugees. And at that time, my youngest brother wasn't born. So they came with 6 children and no other family members, and very little money to their name. And so we, you know, growing up in America, we grew up pretty poor, but definitely loved. My dad worked, you know, sometimes 2-3 jobs, and you know, while my mom raised 7 kids. But it was, you know, it was a good childhood with having 4 brothers and 2 sisters. You know, he always had someone to play with and keep you company.
Yeah, that's a lot of siblings.
I was going to say, you could see our family gatherings and Christmas and holiday parties. On my wife's side, she just has a brother and a sister, and they don't have children. So it's an adult, you know, like holiday party. There's a lot of wine and drinks. Uh-huh. And then on my side, when we go down to North Carolina, you know, compared to like 8 people in Virginia where I live, it's about 30 plus people. And it's kind of chaos in North Carolina. You know, nephews and nieces are running around screaming. Things are being passed around. A lot of food. It's a lot of fun. My wife, when she first came to visit, she was like, I need a time out from your family for a little bit. Let me go in the bedroom, take a little bit of break, and then come back out after 30 minutes because it was so much. But we love it. Yeah. We love it.
Yeah. No, I was just wondering, like, I guess you were like maybe too young to remember anything from like when you guys immigrated, but did you feel like you were out of place like in school, like with your siblings too? And also, did you have any idea of what you wanted to do like growing up, middle school, high school, any of that?
Yeah, I feel out of place. Let me take the first question. I was super lucky. One of my brothers, 2 years older than me, because one of my best friends to this day, always protected me, I think, and shielded me from a lot of things. But I do remember being in ESL for the first couple of years, and I think that was a little difficult, but I picked up after maybe the 2nd year. Not too much. I mean, there was definitely a cultural difference. right?
Right.
What you ate at home versus what you ate at school
Oh yeah,
during lunchtime, what
absolutely.
you went to sleepovers, it was different, right? Or your family, if your friends came over your house, the smells and the food was quite different from what they were used to. So the cultural stuff was significant, and the food. The second question was, I'm sorry, can you repeat the second question?
Yeah, so like what you wanted to do when you grew up, or you had any idea of what you wanted to do?
I wasn't 100% sure. I knew I wanted to help people, and I knew I wanted to be financially secure, right? Because growing up poor and having so many
Yeah, of
siblings, and I
course.
wanted to take care of my parents when I got
Yeah, same
older.
here.
You know how it is, and there's a lot of pressure from the parents too, right? I remember helping a couple Lao American families translate some documents, some citizenship applications growing up, to help them apply for US citizenship. So I remember helping at a young age, and I thought that was fun and cool. And I didn't know what I wanted to do. I played a lot of sports in middle school and high school. Obviously wanted to do the natural thing that most parents want you to do, go to college. Still didn't know exactly what I wanted to do. Took a year off, bartended with my best friend, and I think I was having too much of a good time. My dad pulled me to a side. He pulled me to the side and had a serious conversation, and told me he sacrificed, he and my mom sacrificed too much for me to only be a bartender. And there's nothing against bartenders. They do good service and they make a good living. But I think he just wanted me to strive for a little bit more, and be a little bit more secure financially as well. And he's like, you also have a lot of nieces and nephews that look up to you, and will continue to look up to you. So to set a good example. And so then I took the LSAT, decided to go to law school, took the LSAT, got into law school. And because I thought that was a good balance, right? In terms of helping people, making a difference, and then doing well for your family financially. Right? All of that's quite important.
So I usually don't interview quote unquote like stereotypical Asian careers on this podcast. So you're probably the first like quote unquote stereotypical like engineer, lawyer, doctor, right? That
Yes,
you can
yes,
pick
yes,
from those.
yes.
But I really liked how you talked about like basically family and how big it is in your family, especially since you had so many family members, and how everybody in the family is connected in a way like you could set an example for them and they see you like as a role model, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, so I really like that, and I'm sure the LSAT was really hard.
Okay, let
Yeah,
me
something
just
I
tie something back. Going to law school, when you say we're connected, my brothers and sisters, my because I'm number six, right? So I'm the second youngest, but I tell everyone I'm obviously the favorite. So my older siblings, they even helped me some through law school financially, right? They helped me with some book fees, and I owe them the world. There's no way I would be where I am today without them. And they didn't have that, you're not required to help out your sibling through law school, but because they wanted to, because they loved me so much and they were so kind. So I'm just super lucky.
Yeah, that is really, really sweet. Like law school is super expensive.
Yes.
But yeah, in the beginning of your, I guess, like law career, did you find like anything surprising in the industry, or how did you start off in this industry? Were there any difficult times?
So in law school, they teach you a lot of theory and legal research skills, but they don't teach you much practical skills. They have some trial skills classes and stuff, but they don't teach you as much soft skills.
This
For
is
instance, like
like
how
any
important
other.
is,
any other schooling. Sounds like any other school.
True. You're right. You're right. You're right. You're right. But they don't teach
Yeah.
you how to like connect with clients and how potential clients or other stakeholders and how critical that is to your growth. In terms of like the field, immigration is so dynamic and it could change depending on who's the president, who is the USCIS, United States Citizenship and Immigration Services Director. It could depend. I was surprised on how much discretion and authority an individual USCIS officer has. Like, I could file a case for a super strong case for a CEO of a big company and get that case denied. But then I could file the exact same case type for a mid-level manager and get that case approved without a request for evidence. And we would end up refiling for the CEO or appealing and end up getting the case approved. But it sometimes it's almost luck of the draw because they get hundreds of thousands of applications a day. And you never know which officer you're going to get. It's not like you go to court and you know you're going to have go against that district attorney that day. It's you never even meet that USCIS officer who approves, denies, or issues a request for evidence for your case.
Yeah, it sounds like it's a really I guess especially within immigration law, it's very like I guess like I can't find the right word, but you have to be very flexible, right? Like
Oh gosh, yes.
yeah, like because you don't know when things are going to change because they could change at any moment.
Where
So you
COVID
kind of just
hit,
have to
that
like
was big.
yeah, right. Yeah, I bet, because I don't know, it was a whole mess, right? Because people couldn't fly back to anywhere.
Yeah, we had to submit a lot of emergency requests for people for exceptions. And a lot of that was in the science and medical field. But if you also, if your business was in a critical industry, or infrastructure, that was important. And so we got a lot of those cases in, but you're absolutely right. You have to be very flexible and adapt quickly in this
Oh
field.
yes, yeah, adapt quickly. That's a good way to say it. Yeah. So I guess like how do you kind of handle these cases or times when you kind of have to like do so many things last minute?
Oh, that's a good question. I try to be really organized. I try, the keywords try. But then, so if you try to keep your routine, like for example, for me, I think number one is taking care of your physical, mental, spiritual health first is really important.
Absolutely.
Right. So I try to work out at least 3-4 times a week. I haven't been so great since I've been in Laos, but normally when
That's
I'm back in
okay.
the States, I keep a good schedule.
Vacation.
Yes. And then, having your calendar organized each day, each week, so that what's on the schedule, meetings, cases, deadlines. And then, having, I think what, and I guess this is probably for younger attorneys, like you have to have a good foundation. You have to know the laws, know the rules, know the memorandums, know the adjudicator's field manual. So, and then when you have that base and foundation, you can pivot easier, right? If you don't have that foundation, then it's harder to pivot and change. Maybe like a sports analogy is like if you don't know the fundamentals of basketball, shooting a layup, shooting a three-pointer, you can't then just move to a spin move, a 360 dunk, or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, okay. So now that we got over some, I guess, like difficult parts of the job, which I'm sure there's more, but what are some like did you have any rewarding moments in your career? I'm sure a lot of rewarding moments, but
Yeah, that's a good question. I had a lot, absolutely. I mean, the best part of my days or my day is when I get a call or an email from a client. And there's people, sometimes people call me and they're crying. They're like, I just got my green card in the mail today.
Oh
Thank you
my
so much.
gosh,
Like you changed my life. Right.
yeah.
And that could be anything from a software engineer for a small company to a family who, a spouse who sponsored their significant other. That could be, nail technician, a nail salon, that could be a chef at a restaurant. So those many different case types. But when they email me or call me and those and tell me that like they got their case approved, whether it's a temporary visa, whether it's a green card, because what people forget sometimes is when you don't have US citizenship or a green card, your world and your life is in limbo. And you don't want to buy a house, for instance, and you don't know how long you can live or stay here. And certain visas, you can stay for 5 years or 6 years or 7 years, and you have to renew it every 2 years. And but you have kids and they're going to school, and how much stress and anxiety that they have to go through on a daily basis for stuff that a lot of us in the US take for granted. Because there's normal life stress, and then there's like the immigration side stress that these my clients have to deal with. And if
Oh,
I'm
for
able to
sure.
be a part of that solution a little bit, to help them out, then I'm good for the day. I'm really, really, really happy.
Yeah, no, my parents are still in contact with their immigration lawyer. Like, that's how grateful like they have been. Also, like the kids, like us, the kids have been as
Yes,
well.
yes.
Yeah, so truly, truly, you guys change people's lives. So I know you recently opened your own firm, so congrats on that. I guess like what made you decide to do like go ahead and go like an entrepreneurship route?
So I started off my career working as a boutique firm, at the Watergate building in DC. And then after 4.5 years, I started working for a mid-sized immigration firm for a couple of years. And then for the last 4.5 or so years, I worked at the second largest immigration firm in the US. So I feel like I had a wide variety of experience. I've been thinking about it. My wife and I have been talking about it for a couple of years, and the timing just seemed right. The flexibility, the work-life balance, the ability to be your own boss, right? For instance, if I had a difficult client previously, I couldn't part ways with them. The partner had to make that final decision. It's like they're just too difficult, or they're not paying the bills, whatever may be the reason. But now I have this autonomy, right? I can make this decision that says, don't want to work with you, or I do want to work with you. Like, for instance, some clients may be too small previously, but now I can choose to work with a large client or a small client, work with families, a little bit more diversity in case types. Right now, last year and right now, I'm working on some P3 visas for culturally unique performers, and helping people
Oh,
come,
interesting.
performers from Laos and Thailand and Cambodia come to the US and perform at a concert in California. So
Oh, that's
it's
super
been
cool.
like, and there's so many different case types. And I feel like, not that I didn't connect with my clients previously, I feel like I'm able to connect with them even a little bit more, just a different sense of ownership and connection. And yeah, again, the flexibility, the work-life balance, I'm able to have more dinners with my wife and have more, I probably wouldn't be in Laos right this moment if I was still working at the big firm.
Oh my gosh, I didn't never heard of that about that visa. That is super interesting.
It's almost like the alphabet of visas. You go through like A through Z, not every single
There's
letter,
like a
but there's so many
bunch, like
different. Yes, yeah.
I can't even I can't even. All I know is mostly like the HP, I don't even know HP1, HPV,
H1Bs.
what?
H1Bs. That's probably the most common on the business side. That's for people who have at least a bachelor's degree in the specific field. And the most common is like a software engineer for a position, or a finance person for a financial company. That's quite
Yeah,
common,
I'm
but
definitely not lawyer material. That's all I know.
anyone can be if you want to, only if you want to.
If you want to. Okay, I can see that. But since I guess like since opening your firm, how has the business been going? Have you encountered any interesting things about like running your own on the side of like running your own firm?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of, I would say, like administrative stuff that you have to ensure. gets done right, and whether it's the financial side, whether it's like making sure the website's updated, that's been I probably the biggest challenge for me. Like I could do the casework. I've been doing the casework for over a decade, but luckily my wife came on as the managing director. We hired a paralegal and a legal assistant, so I do have some help. And
Nice.
yeah, the firm's been doing great. I was able to sign, some clients, and it's nice not to have to share the profits with anyone, in terms of a big firm compared to, it's our own firm. And taking the cases that we want to take is really nice.
Definitely having more control over that. But it's so interesting that you, I didn't know you work with your wife, but are there any like clashes between you two during like for work stuff?
No, it's funny. We have a small office, but also we work from home a lot. We our skills and talents complement each other well. She's great, like on the communication side, and like her website was mostly done by her in terms of the language and any social media stuff, and strategic. Like she's I know this podcast is supposed to be about me. I'll go quickly share her story. Her name is Jenipa. She started a nonprofit, and this is close to Laos and me anyway. Nonprofit that raises awareness about the bombs that were dropped on Laos during the Vietnam War. And so there's actually more there was more bombs dropped on Laos than Vietnam. And along the Ho Chi Minh Trail. And so there was upwards of 80 million bombs that did not detonate because Laos is a wet country. And so still today, when farmers or kids are in the forest or in the woods, these bombs will explode if a kid finds it and tries to play with it. And so she, over 15 years ago, she started an organization to raise awareness and funding to help fix this issue. And each year she was able to advocate on the Hill and get increased funding for NGOs to NGOs and Laos to help fix this issue. In each year, whether it's 2 million increased to the 4 million, then increased to 8 million. And then when President Obama came to Laos, I believe the first president to come to Laos, in 20, oh, what was his last year in office? It
16?
was 26, I think it's 2016, sorry. His last year in
Yeah.
office, he mentioned two people in his speech, and she was one of the two people that he mentioned in his
Wow.
speech about the
That's
contributions to the
amazing.
country. Yeah, she's way more interesting than me and accomplished. I'm just like
What's
usually in her
the
shadows.
what's the name of the nonprofit?
Not, yeah, Legacies of War.
Legacies of
They're
War.
still she handed it over a couple years ago to another executive director who's doing a fantastic job, who's continuing on and continuing to expand the nonprofit and the work. But just they do amazing work, and unfortunately it's still needed, because they're to
Yeah,
this
for
day they're
sure.
still kids that are getting hurt.
That's very sad to hear, but also I feel like, okay, I'm definitely gonna ask for your wife's contact.
You
But
are, you are, sure.
because I feel like so many of the histories, especially in Southeast Asia, because like most culturally, most people only know about East Asia, right? But a lot of the history in Southeast Asia is, I guess, erased or not talked about. And so much of this work is very important.
It is. It like you. We didn't really learn about this. We didn't learn about this in middle school or high school, right? Like someone might have taken a college course to, you might have learned about it, but this is not something in most history books that we learn in public
Oh,
schools.
for sure. Yeah. Do you have any, I guess, near future plans or goals for the firm?
That's a good question. We talked about it. We kind of have like a 1 year, 3 year, 5 year plan, and our goal is to expand out in terms of we'd like to be the go-to like allow American immigration attorneys and wills and trusts in the state, and then grow to like be the known as the Southeast Asian, and then continue to grow. I don't want to get too big. Like that's maybe 10 attorneys at the very most, because I don't want to lose touch with the clients in the work. Because then when you grow too big, then like the nexus and the connection just is too far. Yeah, I think that's it, and that way we can still do good work, but not lose sight of our clients and what they need to do.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Khan, for coming on the show. To close out, could you share with the listeners where they can find you online or connect with you?
Sure, yeah. It is at my email is kv@bunglawgroup.com. But our website, which everyone can go to, is vonglawgroup.com, VONGLAWGROUP.com. And you can reach out to us anytime, and we're happy to help with immigration needs, wills, trust, estate, and even if it's something else, we can try to refer you to someone who specializes in that area. So we're happy to connect the people.
Awesome. Yeah, and I'll link everything in the show notes as well. Thank you so much again, Khan, for coming on the show.
Thank you, Karen. I hope you have a great day.